This is Transit Unplugged. I'm Paul Comfort, and today we take a look into the political side of public transportation with Mayor David Holt, who is the mayor of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, the capital city of the state of Oklahoma here in the United States. Mayor Holt is known as a pro-transit mayor, and he talks about the 20-year plan that he is helping to implement as the second mayor in a row to be focused on this, to implement those plans. They have a bus service, paratransit, a streetcar that was started under the last term, and now a bus rapid transit system, which just opened up recently, and they're moving toward additional lines, and they've just voted to move into a regional transportation authority that will eventually fund, build, and operate a light rail line. He's a very pragmatic politician in a nonpartisan city, although he is a registered Republican. And we talk about all that on this episode and show you about what it's like from a mayor's perspective to implement and promote public transportation and how it integrates into the overall city services and the overall city plan to improve the city infrastructure. I think you'll find it a fascinating conversation with Mayor David Holt of Oklahoma City. Now let's join the conversation. David Holt, Mayor of Oklahoma City, thank you so much for being our guest today on Transit Unplugged.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Yeah, excited. I had a mutual friend who told me about you and the great work you're doing there in Oklahoma when it comes to public transit, and also your upcoming role. Very excited for you. You're the new chair of the president, I guess, of the U.S. Conference of Mayors next year. Very exciting, Mayor.
Yes. Well, thank you. It's my honor to be mayor, and I've always been a fan of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, great platform for urban issues. And I'll begin serving as president of that organization in June of 25.
That's exciting. Well, let's talk about a few things today. I want to dive into your city, the public transit system, and all the great plans you have for it. So tell us some about Oklahoma City itself.
Yeah, well, for your listeners who understandably may not be experts on Oklahoma City, and I know you've got listeners all around the world, to give a little bit of context, both maybe from a population and geography standpoint, and geography matters a lot in public transit conversations.
Yeah.
And I'll expand on that in a moment. But we're the 20th largest city by population. I mean, there's more people, and that sometimes surprises people, but I mean, there's more people living in the city limits of Oklahoma City than live in the city limits of Atlanta and Miami and Washington, D.C. and Nashville and so on and so on. We have 700,000 residents in the city limits. Now, if we talk about like the market or the metropolitan statistical area or the MSA, as we call it here in the United States, we fall a little bit farther down the rankings. Obviously, that's going to be, that's going to include our suburbs. And that's about 1.5 million people in total. And there we rank about 42nd. But look, when you're mayor, you're only the mayor of the city. You're not the mayor of the suburbs. So, I always think that it is certainly consequential in my life that when I go to a U.S. Conference of Mayors meeting, there's only 19 people who have more constituents than I do. Now, here's, though, probably the factor that in many ways is more relevant to this conversation. And let me shift to giving people a sense of our geography. So,
okay, great.
In that sense, we are very, very unique. We are one of really, I think, only three American cities that have a high population and are spread out over more than 600 square miles. And the other two that come to mind are Houston and Jacksonville. We're 620 square miles. And to give that, I could make comparisons all day, but one easy one is Boston, I think, is 70 square miles. I mean, there's a lot of American cities, especially more on the eastern half of the United States, that are just a fraction of our size. We, like many states in the Southwest, think about Phoenix and Dallas and Los Angeles, the farther west you went, the closer you were to your, to the invention of the automobile, right? And so most of these cities west of the Mississippi in the United States were built in a different era, right? They were built and populated around the automobile. And that's just obviously cities in the Northeast of the United States were built around horse and buggy, And so it's just a different style. Obviously, that has major consequences for your ability to produce public transit, because it's a lot more expensive in a 620 square mile city to build and operate public transit than it is in a 70 square mile city. And so that certainly has had consequences to our public transit, as it has for many westerly American cities through the years. So in keeping with probably a lot of cities like ours west of the Mississippi, we really had treated public transit like an afterthought for a very long time because of our size. We were really built around the automobile, and our emphasis and our investments as a city had been on that, on streets and on automobile traffic, really for our entire history until very recently. But I'll probably stop there. But I just think that you're probably the most important takeaway for your visitor, your listeners, was to understand, you know, like how many people are here and how big are we? Because those are two key factors for a public transit conversation.
Well, good. Well, let's flip over then to your public transit. Your system's called Embark, part of a larger, it's a city department, right? Tell us about the department it's in and some of the services you all operate there.
Right. Our public transit, really for our whole region to this point, has been really a city department of the city of Oklahoma City. And that has stood in contrast maybe to transit systems in more northeastern cities where the transit system is more a factor in people's daily lives and is often maybe its own government sort of outside of the city government in many cases, because it needs to be sort of a collection of city governments, maybe even a collection of different states in some cases, right? Right. But here in Oklahoma City, because of our size, most of our transit just needs to occur in our city limits. And what transit has historically occurred outside of our city limits has still been operated by us, but sort of maybe under a contract with another city or something. And so, yes, our authority is known as TOPA, the Central Oklahoma Transportation and Parking Authority. It also runs the parking garages in downtown Oklahoma City. And then the sort of the brand name that is on the buses is Embark. And that's sort of the way that it's more publicly known. We have for half a century, and a lot has changed in the last 10 years, and I'll kind of get to that. But for half a century, you know, we were really just a bus system. And quite frankly, a bus system that had really slow, you know, pickup times. I mean, you know, you're going to wait 30, 45 minutes an hour between pickups, really only covered a small portion of the populated part of our city and an even smaller portion of the entire city. You know, if you lived outside of kind of the core, you may likely have no service at all, or you had to walk a couple miles or something if you didn't have another method of getting to the bus stop. For all of these reasons, you know, the service historically was really for people who had no other option. It was really a service of last resort. It was not something that would attract a lot of choice riders in the vernacular of transit, right? So that's the state of affairs from really the end of private streetcars till about 10 or 15 years ago, right? About a half century of history where the city was ultra focused on automobile traffic and investing in ways to make automobile traffic flow freely. And almost, you know, transit was just considered such an afterthought from a funding perspective, from a vision perspective. It wasn't something that city leaders even really talked about. It was kind of there as sort of a nod towards, well, I guess we have to have something for people who can't afford cars, but it will be in many ways the bare minimum. Well, about 15, 20 years ago, I would say, that mentality started to shift. You know, I think you had rising generations that were just more interested in public transit and thought of it as something they might like to do, even though they still own a car, would like to have some options. And I think city leaders also recognized that we had a problem. It was a good problem, but we were growing, you know, from a population perspective. We had, separately from the transit conversation, had started investing in ourselves in 1993 with the passage of an initiative known as MAPS, Metropolitan Area Projects. And MAPS now is on its fourth iteration since 1993. But each step along the way, we've made some pretty big investments in our quality of life. It's a well-known brand name here in Oklahoma City, and it's been very successful, and it led to getting an NBA team. It's led to all of this improvement in Oklahoma City's quality of life, which has led to a dramatic improvement in desirability, which has led, not surprisingly, to the ultimate validation for a city, which is population growth. And so, you know, when I came into the world, we were maybe the 37th largest city. Now we're the 20th largest city. You know, to make that kind of movement is actually relatively rare in American life. You know, cities generally have kind of established themselves, but we're one of those cities that's been on the rise this last quarter century. Well, all of this means, of course, that, you know, it's a little more traffic, it's a little more crowded, and you can start to anticipate a world where you're going to need other options. And the thing about transit, as I'm sure your listeners know better than anybody, is it's a really expensive and complicated endeavor to build a transit system. And you can't just wake up on the morning that you've got gridlock and decide, I would like to have a fully, you know, fully formed light rail system. I mean, if you do that, you are a quarter century away from that moment. So you better get started a little bit before you're in a crisis. And so my predecessor, Mayor Cornett, presided over, I think, that first shift in thought about this and the first movement towards some real planning and some regional partnerships. So about, gosh, it's almost 20 years ago now, our city adopted what they called the fixed guideway study, which, of course, transit is really good at putting, you know, things into technical terms that no lay people can understand. You know, I try to do my best to translate it, you know. But it was a fixed guideway study in our case. It was really just a plan for what transit might look like in the decades ahead. And it had four components. One was simply better bus service, you know, just like more lines, more frequency. The second was bus rapid transit, which at the time of this adoption 20 years ago, we didn't have any bus rapid transit. I think of bus rapid transit as sort of a compromise. It's a cheaper way to provide the same kind of service that you get in a rail-based transit, right. You know, but it's highly frequent and it kind of has a different feel, you know, it feels like something you want to ride, not that you would have to ride, you know. The third element of our fixed guideway study was a downtown streetcar to circulate people as we bring them downtown without a car. And then the fourth element was another method that would bring them downtown, in addition to bus rapid transit and buses, and that would be some sort of light rail, but obviously limited, you know, trying to find like the high population corridors where it would really make sense. And we have two major suburbs, one to the north and one to the south, Edmond and Norman. And the thought has always been, if we could just have a straight line from Edmond to Norman right through downtown Oklahoma City with a light rail line, that would be highly utilized. That would be highly useful. So those four elements are what we developed 20 years ago. And we've really just been working that plan ever since. I mean, it's been quite methodical and we haven't really deviated from it. And it takes a lot of time, as you can imagine. But every time we've sort of had a funding method come along that could give us an opportunity to check another box on that plan, we've utilized it. So in 2009, we had MAPS 3. So I mentioned the MAPS series of initiatives. Well, they're kind of like a movie series now. We sort of number them like sequels. And so MAPS 3, it was kind of perfect to put in the downtown streetcar. Now, the downtown streetcar, in my view, is really part of a comprehensive system, and it'll make the most sense when all these other elements are in place and you've got locals coming up to downtown who don't have a car and therefore need a little bit of a circulator. But it fit financially with sort of the room we had in MAPS 3. So we went ahead and did it. And it opened in 2018. And then somewhere around that time period, we secured a grant for our first bus rapid transit line. This was a federal grant paired with some local match. And that took a few years to implement. And so we just opened that a few months ago. And it goes to the Northwest in our four quadrants. It's kind of serving one of those quadrants. And then we've just methodically improved bus service as opportunities presented themselves. We haven't had like a new funding string for it, but I mean, we've done things that probably a lot of other communities would have taken for granted, but where we were just so far behind on. I mean, we didn't have Sunday bus service when I took office. We've added Sunday bus service. We didn't serve on holidays. We've added holiday bus service. I mean, just little stuff like that. And we've tried to do better. MAPS 4 then came along and presented yet another option funding.
Let me ask you a question, Mayor.
Yeah,
on the MAPS. Are these referendums that you're putting out to the voters? And how are they funded?
Yes, absolutely. So these are temporary 1 cent sales taxes, and all taxes in Oklahoma have to be approved by the voters. And so we kind of, as a community, these are big deals in Oklahoma City. We kind of come together, we plan and talk for like a year or two, what's going to be in the next MAPS, you know? And the first one had 9 projects. MAPS 3 that had the streetcar in it, it had 8 projects, and the streetcar was one of them. And then when I took office in 18, it was kind of time to talk about MAPS 4.
Okay.
And so ultimately, MAPS 4 was voted on by the voters in December of 19, and it had 16 projects in it.
And big one.
And it's $1.1 billion. It's an 8-year, 1 cent sales tax. And transit is basically one of the 16 projects, but within transit are several sort of sub projects.
Yeah, let's walk through those.
Yeah. So this is, you know, like $100 million ish. And it's going to fund, first of all, bus shelters. You know, like we have, you know, hundreds of stops, and most of them are like a metal pole.
Yeah, right.
And maybe
stick in the mud, I call it. Yeah.
Stick in the mud.
Yeah. Right.
And this will basically provide a covered shelter for every utilized stop. You know, found out through this process, I was like, we have so many stops that, not so many, but I mean, you know, like a not insignificant number of stops. They're highly underutilized, but it's like, there's no real incentive to get rid of them. They're not causing any problem. You know, it's just the bus doesn't stop there if there's no one standing there, but someone may only stand there once a week, you know, but the ones that really have service that have, you know, some utilization at a reasonable level, we will have a covered stop. And we were able, that's a perfect kind of thing for MAPS to address.
Yeah.
This MAPS 4 will also provide the funding to do a bus rapid transit line to the Northeast and to the South. So we already have the line that just opened to the Northwest that was largely funded by a federal grant. Now we'll have lines after the implementation of MAPS 4 to the Northeast and to the South. And that's the biggest chunk of the MAPS 4 transit funding. And there's some other little dollars in there for some other things, but those are kind of that's the meat of it. And then finally, the other big development in the last few years with transit is the creation of our first regional transit authority, which state law had provided for. The legislature had given us that option, but nobody had utilized it yet. And we were the first. We still are the only. And so where it stands now is that Oklahoma City, Edmond, and Norman, those two large suburbs, one to the north, one to the south, have created the regional transit authority. It's sort of a separate government from the cities themselves. Each of us sends representatives to the board. And I appointed our former governor, Brad Henry, who is now a resident of Oklahoma City and was kind of looking for a way to serve, something to do. And, you know, his post-gubernatorial service. And I was really excited that he would take on this obligation, because I also knew he's a successful politician, and there's going to be a tax vote here. There's no funding this without a tax vote. And let's get a guy in there as the initial leader who understands politics too, you know? So he has been chairing that now for 3 or 4 years, and we are looking to a tax vote sometime in the next couple of years. The state law only allows sales tax, and it would be a sales tax voted on and collected basically in the three cities. Which would is that, the first. We never had anything quite like that.
Be to fund the light rail that you were talking about?
Yeah. So the thought is that the responsibility chiefly of the Regional Transit Authority, the RTA, as we locally call it, would be to fund that light rail line from Edmond to Norman. Yeah, I mean, they'll exist forever. So hopefully they'll continue to figure out new ways. But that's like job number one. I think that's the sexiest thing. That's the thing people want to see. That's what they'll have in mind when they vote. And so that's their major responsibility and contribution. But if you go back to that plan I talked about that we adopted as a community 20 years ago, you know, we've added bus rapid transit. We're adding more line. We built the downtown streetcar. That's done. We are now in a conversation about light rail, and we've got a mechanism in place to pursue that, connecting us to our two largest suburbs. And, you know, on bus service, we're still working. I find that to be the most challenging, probably, because it's just so operationally heavy. It's not necessarily, it's easier sometimes to find one-time capital dollars.
Yeah.
It's harder to find that sort of perpetual operating money. And that's really what a better bus system requires. But we're making more incremental improvements there. But I would say this is a community that unabashedly and clearly has done a 180 on transit over the last 15 or 20 years. And I credit my predecessor, Mick Cornett, and obviously I'm trying to build upon that, and I'm getting to cut some of those ribbons that I think he laid the foundation for, and obviously trying to plant some seeds of my own through MAPS 4 and the RTA. And I like our direction, and I think that our residents ultimately will be very grateful for the forethought that's gone into this, so that as traffic escalates, as crowding escalates, and they're looking for other options, it's not too late. You know, we've already got something at least in the pipeline. And so it's an interesting time in Oklahoma City. It's, you know, I look at other communities and I recognize we're decades behind. But you gotta start eating the elephant at some point, and that's right. What we've done these last few years.
That's awesome, Mayor. And so the transit, couple questions, kind of like a lightning round of a few questions here, and then I want to get to your background for a few minutes before we wrap up. So how is the current operation dollars funded for your transit system? Is Jason Fairbrush, he's your director?
Yeah, so Jason Fairbrush is our transit director. He's also an assistant city manager in our form of government, a council manager form of government. We have a city manager. He's got a handful of assistant city managers. And Jason was the transit director. He was doing such a great job that it was a natural that he'd be elevated to assistant city manager. But he was so invaluable at transit and so appreciated in that role. He held on to it.
Gotcha.
I'm very grateful. I don't know how he does it. I mean, I guess I shouldn't talk. I'm the mayor and the dean of a law school. You know, we all wear multiple hats. But you know, thankful to him for how hard he works and managing those two things. But to answer your question about where our transit dollars come from, it's largely general fund money.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that makes it challenging, of course.
Yeah.
I talked about, you know, I think I pretty much itemized where like the capital dollars have all come for these new projects. But in terms of operating dollars, no, there's no like dedicated transit tax or anything like that. I mean, we talk about it from time to time, but it just, you know, the political will hasn't been there. The RTA vote would have to be a permanent tax. So like maybe kind of the upfront years would be more capital heavy, and then it would sort of transition more to usage for operating dollars. But no, at the city level, we're just getting it out of general fund. And of course, look, people in transit take it for granted that fares are maybe 10% of your costs, right? Like that's not a major, that's not covering the cost of providing the service.
Right.
But I always think it's a little unfortunate that that's not more widely understood, because when you do charge something, people assume, that you're charging for a reason, that is covering the cost. We get that a lot with the streetcar. You know, they'll say, can you believe they're subsidizing the streetcar, that those fares don't even cover it? We shouldn't even do it. You know, and I'm like, you know,
nowhere in the country. Yeah.
New York subway doesn't pay for itself. You know, like everybody subsidizes transit. I get why some cities have looked at just eliminating fares completely, because they're really kind of confusing more than anything, but sometimes more trouble than they're worth. But yeah, we obviously, like everybody, get only a small percentage of our funding from fares. Most of it's coming through the general fund, which is essentially coming from sales tax.
Well, you are a rare breed in the sense that you are a pro-transit Republican mayor of a city in middle America. And it has evidently worked for the voters, because you got more votes in your reelection, I think, than anybody's gotten in 100 years in the city. So congratulations, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Well, look, it's like everything in moderation, right? I mean, if you're ideological about it and you're like, well, I'm a Republican, I can't be for transit at all. That's a stupid worldview, first of all, but also it's really not that popular. I mean, there's certainly a significant proportion of Republicans who support some public transit. I think when cities get into trouble, especially when they push it so far that they fail some big referendum, it's again, maybe too ambitious. And then ambition is pleasing to some part of the electorate. I want the number to start with a B. You know, I want it to be, to project out into 2060. You know, I want that vision. And the problem is not everybody's there. So I think a good mayor is finding that middle ground. You know, maybe scale back the vision a little bit, but not to zero. You know, like let's find that middle ground where people can say, yeah. So I think like you look at the RTA. I think the middle ground, kind of the moderate view, is let's just talk about Edmond and Norman. You know, let's not talk about 16 different lines to every corner of the region.
That's
where cities make a mistake. They kind of they get too excited, you know, and they get kind of ginned up by people who are naturally and understandably excited about this stuff, but are really kind of outliers politically, you know. And let's talk about one line. Let's start there. I think that's what the population can stomach on a bipartisan basis.
Yeah.
And then we'll be more successful. So, yeah, I mean, I may be a registered Republican, although I want to be clear, in our form of government, I'm nonpartisan. And I take that very seriously. But I had been a Republican in the state Senate, and so I have that history. But my view is that, in my experience, is that lots of Republicans are not like completely lying in the sand against public transit. They just want something that's kind of reasonable and maybe not too ambitious.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't mean to indicate that Republicans aren't for it, but you've really gotten a great vision and are willing to kind of put some of your political capital out there to raise funds and put money in your MAPS program. So kudos to you from our perspective in transit that you're making logical steps in the right direction, it seems like, you know, and you got a 20-year plan and you're carrying it out. That's awesome.
Yeah, no, I'm proud of our community. I think, again, we sort of found that middle ground. And look, I understand why you would say what you said a minute ago. Don't hold back because there are absolutely Republican Party platforms across this country that are anti-transit, you know, like absolutely shut it down, don't have it at all. But that has always represented in reality a kind of an extremist view, you know. And again, like I operate on this issue and all other issues by working with the 70% of normal people in the middle from both political parties who just want to work together and get things done. And I fully recognize that in modern American politics, you know, close partisan primaries sort of elevate the extremes at both ends. And in our case, we have a type of electoral system that has really allowed me to kind of just find that sweet spot of normality in the middle and find a path forward that is good enough for both sides. Maybe not pleasing to the extremists who hate transit or the extremists who think we should spend our entire budget on transit, but for the 70% in the middle who want to see moderate steps and moderate thoughtful steps forward on public transit, we found that sweet spot for sure.
Well, thank you for giving us what we don't often get, which is kind of like the political view of transit and how the long-term process, the planning, and how to actually get things done. Because if you don't have a seat at the table and you're not bringing the majority of the people with you, it's probably not going to be there for the long term. So this has been a very instructive interview, I think. Thank you so much, Mayor Holt.
No, absolutely. Yeah. My pleasure. Yeah, no, I mean, finding that, that's my world, is to sort of bring the dreamers together with the realists. And the realists are those who get politics, especially in a community like ours, where anything of substance is going to have to pass a vote of the people.
Well, we wish you the very best in your upcoming role as the head of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, a very important position. And congratulations on your recent stepping up as dean of the law school there in Oklahoma, a fellow attorney. Nice to meet you there, too. Hopefully we can check back with you in a couple of years when you're head of the U.S. Conference of Mayors and talk to you more about what's happening nationally with cities across the country and your role there.
Sounds great. Thank you, Paul.
Hey, thanks.
This is Tris Hussey, editor of the Transit Unplugged podcast. Thanks for listening to this week's episode featuring Mayor David Holt of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Now, coming up next week on the show, we have Justin Stuenberg, general manager of the Madison Metro Transit System, talking about all the big projects he's got going on there in Wisconsin. Hey, did you know transitunplugged.com is the place to get everything Transit Unplugged? You can catch up on past episodes, watch Transit Unplugged TV, subscribe to the newsletter, and find our links to social media so you can follow us there. Transit Unplugged is brought to you by Midaxo. At Midaxo, we're passionate about moving the world's people. And at Transit Unplugged, we're passionate about telling those stories. So until next week, ride safe and ride happy.